I'd like to introduce our main speaker for this evening, John P. from La Mesa.
John Pett's alcoholic. I want to thank Larry for inviting me to come out and speak tonight. It's an honor and a privilege to be asked to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous. I especially want to thank the people who set the room up, who made the coffee, who opened the place up, put up the scrolls, were here with the birthday cake. Because those are the people, those are the jobs that when I was new in Alcoholics Anonymous, those are the jobs that I was asked to do. And, you know, it's funny, I still put up the chairs and a meeting I go to, and I set up two meetings, and so I'm still doing the same thing I was doing when I got here. That might have something to do with why I'm still here. I want to welcome the newcomers. You know, if this is your first time to Alcoholics Anonymous, I want you to know that the first time I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I did not think it was a good idea. I was not happy. I was not interested in getting sober. I was not interested in staying sober. In fact, I didn't even know what sober was. I thought it was a little controlled drinking and that kind of stuff. And so if you're new and you're kind of sitting here going, this sucks, I can identify. And, you know, I'd be happy to, if you come up to me after the meeting, I'd be happy to spend some time and talk to you about that. And if you're coming back again, I hope that you've had the most important drink you've ever had in your life, and that's your last one. I was a retread, and I'm very glad that I've had what I think, and I hope, and I pray, and I thank God is my last drink. You know, everything good and decent in my life today is a direct result of Alcoholics Anonymous. Everything good and decent is a direct result of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. This, you know, when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I had no idea what this ride was going to be. I had no idea what this journey was going to be. And, you know, if I had tried to predict what it was going to be, I would have fallen way short of some of the most beautiful moments I've had in my life here. And some of the most beautiful opportunities I've had to be here. And, you know, I think that the thing that I am most grateful for today is that I have an opportunity, I have the privilege of working with some men who asked me to take them through that book and share a little bit of my experience, strength, and hope, one-on-one, and watch them come alive, watch the sparkle come into their eyes, and watch them wake up and see them realize that they've got this thing in front of them that's not a death sentence, that it's a blessing. And if I don't ever get another thing out of this deal, getting that is pretty darn good. Pretty darn good. I guess some of the... I want to thank Andy for his 10 minutes. He did a great job. And Andy and I have a lot in common, I want you to know. We're both short. We both got our hair combed back. And we both got said no to today for a coffee date. Patrick, too. So if you got turned down for a coffee date today, hey, you know, we feel your pain. Nah. It's, you know what, it's hysterical. I mean, the longer I'm here, the more I realize that I got more in common with all of you than I ever thought. And you know something? The longer I'm here, the more I get to learn from you. Because you all, I need you all a whole lot more than you need me. And that's a fact. You know, Like I said, if this room hadn't been set up and the coffee hadn't been made and all that kind of stuff, what would this room full of drunks have done tonight? How many of us would have gotten drunk? How many of us wouldn't be able to sit here and be safe? You know, and if you're new, I want you to know something. You're in a safe place. And if you're not so new, I want you to know something. You're in a safe place. My sponsor likes to say that Alcoholics Anonymous ought to be a haven for the suffering and not a showcase for the contented. You know, when I was new, oh, that's right, I got to thank some other people too. There's a whole group of people here tonight who were invited and some who weren't invited, but they decided to show up anyway. And, you know, when I was new, what we did, what the guys who were, the old timers who were around when I got here, they would throw us in the car on a Saturday night like tonight. And there'd be three or four carloads of people. And we'd say, where are we going? They say, don't worry about it. Just get in the car. What do you care? I don't know. I just like to know where I'm going. They say, it doesn't matter. And we go to dinner, and we all come and invade a meeting. You know, and we'd all show up, and it was just like that every weekend. Because every weekend, somebody was talking. And, you know, the reason I did that with the guys who came here tonight, the people who I asked to tag along, is I wanted them to see what that looks like. Because that was so important for me being able to come here and just feel as though I could stay here. That you guys weren't ready to kick me out just because of who I was. You know, that I could be the biggest jerk in the world and you weren't going to throw me away. Because you could identify with where I was because you walked in the shoes that I was walking in as a newcomer. And these guys just grabbed me up and, you know, because I'm the short guy and I was also the new guy, I got to sit on the hump in the back seat. And I learned a valuable lesson very quickly. If you don't want to sit on the hump, find a new guy. Because the new guy gets the hump. Now they make cars, they don't have humps anymore. I don't know. You know, it's like, it's kind of a drag. I mean, it's like, you know, I always want to throw somebody on the hump. You know what I mean? You know, and they taught me something else. Joey and I were saying, I said it to Joey before the meeting. You know what? If I come to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and I got my car full, I'm probably not going to drink that night. I'm probably not going to drink. And I also learned something about that whole deal, and that was is that if I didn't want to sit, like, squished up with a bunch of guys, get a car. So you could drive and throw guys in your car, and then you got to sit comfortably. So there's a really good deal with filling people up in your car and getting to go to meetings. You know, and I don't know if that sounds like it's like too simple, but it's kind of simple like this. By the way, happy birthday to Anthony and to Sean. I just want to ask the group a question. Where's everybody in between 1 and 26? Where's everybody between 1 and 26? Good. We have some people between 1 and 26. That's good. But the guys, the old timers, they did something else with me. And they did something else with us obnoxious newcomers. They said, kid, come all the way in. Sit all the way down and shut all the way up. Because you don't have anything that we want to hear. And you need to listen. I thought that was extremely harsh because I had a lot to share. Not much of any value. Not much of any value at all. It's gotten worse. So that's what you have to look forward to for the rest of the night. How long do I talk? 45 minutes?
15 minutes.
15 more minutes or 50?
No, you have 13 minutes.
Okay. All right. Cool. Thanks. Those old-timers did something else with me. They said, kid, we need your help. They need my help? Wow. I like it. Proceeded to take me into the kitchen when we had coffee cups and ashtrays and said, wash the coffee cups and wash the ashtrays. Now, I didn't know that they were also tricking me instead of just making me a slave. And the way they were tricking me is that they were giving me the meeting after the meeting. And we would sit there, we would stand there washing cups and drying them, and they would stack them and put them in the cupboards. And we would talk, and they would talk, and they would talk in that little magic place, in the little small groups where you hear the noise of and the music of Alcoholics Anonymous, of guys sharing with each other and women sharing with each other and laughing. I don't know about you, but when I got to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was not laughing at all. I was miserable. Biographical data. My sobriety date is January 31st of 1985. My sponsor will tell you that that is no big deal. My sponsor has been sober since June the 4th of 1962. Now, he would tell you that that's not so impressive because his grandmother was sober her entire life. And my sponsor is Johnny H. And my home group is the Passing On Big Book Study on Wednesday nights in Mission Valley. It starts at 7 o'clock, and if you're ever down that way, please come and visit us. Please come and join us. We'd love to have you. You know, I was the kind of kid who only thought about me. And now, that doesn't make me alcoholic. Because I'm not so sure that that's not just being human. And human beings are, and kids especially, are selfish and self-centered. But I will tell you this. I know that I didn't feel like I ever fit in anywhere. I always felt like you all had the secret handshake or the password or the whatever. And the only reason that you let me hang out with you at all is so you could ditch me later on and get some yucks about ditching the kid. And I felt that way the whole time I was growing up until I took my first drink. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I had my first drink and that, you know, the fireworks went off and the sky lit up and everything else like that happened. And I realized that I'd found the magic elixir because I had no idea. All I knew was I didn't feel scared anymore. I didn't feel outside anymore. I didn't feel like there was something wrong with me anymore. And, you know, if my drinking had, like, stayed there, it might have been okay. But the problem was is that when I drink, I set off a physical allergy. My body doesn't metabolize alcohol the way civilians' bodies metabolize alcohol. And that's what I call the non-alcoholics or civilians. It's my own little special humorous thing. I don't know. And what happens is that I set off this phenomenon of craving, and I don't know when I'm going to stop. Now, when you're 13 years old and you weigh about 70 pounds, and as I did, it only takes a couple of drinks before you fall over and pass out. And that's what happened. It didn't take long. And I didn't get up the next day and think, oh my God, can't wait till I do that again. Because again, I didn't know what was going on. I had no idea. But I do know this, and that was is that over the next 3 or 4 years, as I drank, I would always drink, and I would always set off that phenomenon of craving, and I would always drink way past getting there. You know where there? You know that there? You know what? That was where I always wanted to live, just right there. And my alcoholism didn't allow me to do that. Now, I didn't know I was alcoholic. I didn't know I was alcoholic until I got to the rooms of AA. But what also happened to me in those 3 or 4 years initially when I was a teenager is that when I was sober, I was miserable. Absolutely miserable. I was restless and irritable and discontented without being able to put those words to how I felt. I can remember thinking, gosh, I just need to stop feeling this way. Please, give me something. Give me something. And then I would get that something, and then I would be okay. I became well acquainted early on in my drinking with projectile vomiting. You know, I would do things like this. We would all get together and we would be going to a party. And of course, it would be at somebody's house. And of course, no alcohol was allowed. By the way, this is a long time ago. And we'd all have a six pack or a bottle of wine or whatever. And I can remember starting to drink my bottle of wine or whatever it was. And these guys would like, my guys who were with would drink like a quarter of a bottle or a third of the bottle or whatever, right? Not me. I thought we had, you know, hey, before I walk in the door, I got to drink the whole bottle. And I would invariably finish the whole bottle before we even went in the house. I'd say, hey, you guys go ahead, I'll catch up. And, you know, ergo projectile vomiting. You know, and I was also a real messy drunk, which meant that I didn't clean it up afterwards. I would just get up and leave. I wasn't invited back very many places. You know, and I could not put two and two together. I didn't know that there was something wrong with my drinking. I did not know at all. But I did know that I didn't like making messes at places. And so I treated my alcoholism with the next best thing besides alcohol, and that was smoking weed. And I don't know for you folks out there if you ever did that, but that's, you know, I did that. And it worked for a couple of years. And you want to know something? I eventually got thirsty again. Because the reality is that the only thing that truly treated my alcoholism was alcohol. And when I started drinking again in my about 18, 19 years old, there was not a day that I didn't drink from then until I walked into what used to be Alvarado Parkway Institute here down the street in La Mesa in May of 1984. Now, I didn't get drunk every day, but I drank every day. And I went through that phase in my drinking and with my family. This poor woman who was my first wife, who got to be abused and lied to and hurt, somebody who I'll never be able to make amends to, no matter what. And I would make those solemn oaths. I promise, not today. I promise. Now, I don't know about you. I thought I was being sincere. But there was one little problem. I was making those promises while taking a couple of bong hits and drinking a beer. Now, I don't know about you, but beer's not drinking. Beer's beer. I mean, I've been drinking beer for breakfast for years by that time. That was just the normal thing. I won't drink the whiskey. And I won't go to the connections house. And I'll be here when you get home. It never happened. Some stories. You know, if this makes sense to you, if this is the way you drank, maybe you drank a little bit like I did. There were nights when we would go to the bar and we would just line up the shots on the bar. And I'd go in one direction and somebody else would go in the other direction. And, you know, the idea was to not leave any shots for anybody else. And I rarely ever did. And then somebody would invariably have to carry me home because I wasn't going to be able to drive. They usually had to carry me to the bathroom first and then get to carry me home into the house or throw me on the front lawn. Maybe I could crawl into the house. And that's just the way I happen to drink. Now, if you are here tonight and you didn't have any fun drinking, I'm sorry. I did have fun drinking, and I don't want you to think that it was all like the end of my drinking. But the end of my drinking was kind of like this. I'd go to bed at night, and I would close my eyes. After the light got turned out, I would say, God, please, don't let me wake up tomorrow. And I did that because I knew that if I woke up, tomorrow was going to be just like today. And all I wanted to do was die. But I was too much of a coward to actually do it. I wanted God to do it like in my sleep so it wouldn't hurt. Because I'm a coward. And I don't like pain. And besides which, I want stuff done for me. Don't make me do anything for crying out loud. Kind of like the way I was when I got to AA. So, you know, and that, living that way day after day after day after day after day, was my bottom. Complicated. And I'm not mechanically inclined. Just saying. Hey, you know, your 10-minute speaker and your main speaker got said no to today. We're a couple of losers. Makes no never mind to me. Anyway, you know, to know that that was never going to change. You know, and so what that ended up looking like is that, you know, that first wife I had got a little bit sick and tired of my nonsense. And so I said, okay, I'll try to do something about my drinking or whatever. And so I started going to meetings. Now, there was a major fundamental flaw. Actually, I thought I had a great plan. I actually am quite proud of it. I couldn't go with her because I knew if I went with her, I couldn't drink on the way to the meeting. So, I know, bummer. And I would go to meetings, and I would finish off a joint in the parking lot and take some... either finish the beer I was drinking, or whatever, and I go into the meeting. And I would sit in that meeting, and, you know, if you, as a wet trunk. Now, I want you to know something. Those people loved me because they didn't throw me out. Even though I was an obnoxious, loud, you know, wet drunk in their room. And I want you to know that it's a privilege to be able to come in and be a guest in your home. Be a guest in your meeting. And when I look back on the way I behaved those times, because I couldn't stay sober between meetings, that was like, that just wasn't in the cards. I wasn't interested. I just wanted to get her off my back. And then my next bright idea was, okay, you know what, we need to be apart for a week or so. And I went and got a room up on El Cajon Boulevard, about 56th and El Cajon. Great neighborhood. The guy asked me if I wanted the, how long I wanted the room. I told him a week. He went, kind of caught him off guard. And the reality is that my entire plan was, and what I did was that I went out and got a couple handles of Jack Daniels and a couple cases of beer. And I drank the way I wanted to drink. Because she wouldn't let me drink the way I wanted to drink. And I was tired of hiding it from her. Well, the week came up and I went home and I wasn't sober and she knew it. And I was like, when the nonsense was over. As I said, I went into that facility at Alvarado Parkway Institute in May of 1984. And again, I thought I was not going to quit drinking. I go in and like, dry out for 30 days. Maybe be able to come out and do a little controlled drinking. Certainly be able to enjoy it again. And I was very, very lucky because I caught the illness of alcoholism in that treatment center. Not from the treatment center, but from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was only then that I woke up and I went, oh, that's what's going on. It's not that I have a drinking problem. I have a sobriety problem. And alcohol is my solution for my sobriety problem. Alcohol is my answer to all my problems. No wonder I never wanted to give it up. No wonder the idea of not being able to ever drink again was like, are you nuts? No wonder even just not drinking every day was beyond anything I could think of, beyond my imagination. And unfortunately, you know, what happens for us when we come into Alcoholics Anonymous, what happened for me is this, is that, oh my gosh, you're taking away my best friend. You're taking away my solution. What do I do now? And they pointed to those. And I looked at those and I said, are you out of your mind? I don't know about you, but God had never done a goddamn thing for me. Don't know about you. That's just the way I felt. And you're telling me that I got to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand Him? I don't think so. And so I immediately became terrified. I'm sitting there going, oh my God, there's no chance for me. And if you're sitting in this room and you're kind of new and you're worried about whether this thing's going to work for you, I don't care whether you don't believe in God, you do believe in God, you love God, or you hate God. It don't matter. because there's a power greater than you who's going to keep you sober. And the evidence is right here. The evidence is right here. Alcohol ran my life. Alcohol is what made my life unmanageable. I had no chance of being able to stay sober on my own. But I stand here today sober. That must mean that there's got to be something stronger than booze for me anyway. And that means for anybody who's sitting in this room who's alcoholic, who's sober, it means there's something stronger than booze for them too. And that's all it takes, is believing that there's something stronger than booze that'll work, that you can follow us around with. And you don't even have to believe in it. You don't even have to pray to it. You don't have to do any of that. You just have to do what those old timers did for me, which was, kid, get in the car. Where are we going? I don't know. What do you care? What are we going to do? Well, we're going to go get something to eat, and then we're going to go to a meeting. And that was just like they told me that over and over and over and over again. As Joey likes to say, I'm retarded. Slow to learn. Slow to learn. You know, when I came out of that treatment center, I was chapter 3. I'm glad. It's kind of nice hearing it read tonight. I had a plan. I want you to know that my plan was to be the rising star of Alcoholics Anonymous, just like Andrew. And my name was going to be on the tip of everyone's tongue, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, and then I was like the guy in the book, though. When I got to the end of my life, or close to it, and I stopped working, I was going to sit on my porch, and now we're going to come the slippers and the bottle of whiskey and the six-pack of beer and the nice homegrown. They make it really available now. And that was my plan. See, I'd already had in mind when my next drink was going to be. And if you're sitting in this room tonight and you got a plan on when your next drink's going to be, and you came here with somebody tonight, please tell them. Please tell them. I was lucky. I got to get back. Because after 8 months of sobriety, I drank. And I had no choice. And if you'd asked me 10 seconds before I put that drink in my hand and I put that drink to my lips, I would have told you that there's no way I'm going to drink. Out of the blue, not a cloud on the horizon, bam, handed to me. And that's what happened. And I had no defense at all. And just like that, I drank. Now the good news is I got to have my last drink. And I came back to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I want to tell you something. I went to my sponsor at the time, and I told him, I said, like we all do when we come back after going out, you know. You won't believe what I did. I'm a terrible person. You know what that son of a bitch did? He started laughing. I'm serious. He started to laugh. And I go, what's so funny? And he goes, John, you have no idea, do you? And I said, absolutely. Why would I ask you what's so funny if I knew what the heck you were laughing about? And he said, John, you have no idea that that experience is going to be able to help countless others. That you now have an experience that makes you uniquely qualified to help certain people, to help somebody else who maybe has that same experience of going out and coming back and being miserable. And oh, by the way, the ego blow of throwing away all that time. Real quality sobriety, uh-huh. Planning my next drink. Yeah. You know, going from somebody who had nothing to give to be somebody who actually might have something to give. So, you know, that was a long time ago. That was over 33 years ago. And since that time, I've buried two sponsors. I'm trying to bury another one. I tell him that, you know, not to worry. But the reality is that, you know, my current sponsor, I'm just going to spend a few minutes on this. My current sponsor has probably done more for me than, I don't know. They have all done great things for me. But my current sponsor has done something for me that I look back on and I realize what a tremendous gift it's been. And that's been that guy has required that I grow up. You know, I don't know about you, but I was an impossible, immature, grandiose, spoiled little brat. You know, and I didn't care about you, and I didn't care about anybody else. In fact, I was rather mad that you were even breathing my air. And the truth of the matter is that growing up has been the one thing that has allowed me to care about you. I never thought that. I never knew that was what the connection was. Having some compassion and some understanding and some caring for some other people. And not always thinking that it was all about me. You know, he would say to me, "Jackass, get off your ass and go do something for somebody else. Go find a newcomer. Go pick up a chair." In fact, he says that to me every Monday night. Because he doesn't have anything more to give. And that's the wisdom of his experience. Of getting out of my own head requires that I go do something for you. It requires that I go pick up a chair. That I pick up a piece of trash, whatever. That I throw away whatever. My trash. You know, that I finally act like a grown-up. I can tell you today, it's the hardest thing I do every day. Because I still want you to do everything for me. And only little kids want everything done for them. So this thing about growing up and being able to stay sober, being able to live comfortable in my own skin a little bit, you know, it kind of fits all together. And we have this neat deal here in Alcoholics Anonymous. By picking up a chair, by throwing some trash away, by setting up a room, or by doing this and sitting and greeting people and saying hi, and by the way, not being so damn lazy I can't walk across the room and say, "Hi, I'm John. What's your name? Can I get your number? You might be able to help me stay sober." If you're looking for newcomers, that's the best way to trick them. Tell them that they might be able to help you stay sober. They'll respond every time. Every time. But it's by doing those things that I get to be okay in my own skin. That I get to lose this feeling of being separate and not part of. And that you have the secret handshake. And that you're talking behind my back. And you're just trying to ditch me. All that gets to go away. And I get a little quiet. I get a little quietness in my head. And a little calmness in my heart. And for an alcoholic like me, who chased and searched and wanted that right from the get-go, what a gift. You know, there are three prayers. When we get here to Alcoholics Anonymous, we say, "God help me." And I said it, "God help me." And then we say, "God give me." And if we're lucky and we stay here long enough, and somebody takes us through these steps and teaches about us about these traditions, we get to say, God, use me. So if you're in this room tonight, I hope what you get is being able to ask God, God, please use me. Because there's no greater thing in this deal is being able to be useful to God and the people around me. And but for the program Alcoholics Anonymous and a God who I didn't believe in and who loved me anyway, I would have missed it all.